Hello, this is Youth Beat Radio. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Today on our show, students from Upper Arlington High School share important experiences, stories, and realizations that help them deal with the inevitable difficulties life thrusts at them. Through mistakes and indecisions in his past, Matt Steffen discovered that he must do his best in the present so that he can be better prepared for a bright future, a lesson I'm sure many of us have learned the hard way.
My life has a superb cast. However, I haven't been able to figure out the plot. This quote is true to my life. I have many close friends who always make my life enjoyable and interesting. However, I'm not sure what I want to do yet in life. Lately, I've heard many people talk about what they want to do, where they want to go to college, and where they want to work. I haven't even planned what I'm going to be doing tomorrow night, but I believe that someday when I have to make the decision, all the things I've filled my present life with will allow me to make my decisions in the future. Beginning as early as second grade as a class, we were asked by teachers what we wanted to do when we grew up. Other eager kids in the classroom readily answered with typical jobs like being a doctor or becoming a fireman. I never had an answer to what I thought was the most important question, an answer that chosen in elementary school would ultimately shape my future. I knew I wanted to do something I liked, but I didn't really know what it was. Starting as early as first grade, my focus was on music and learning piano. To me, it was just viewed as a day in the week where the teacher would come into our home, sit with me at the piano, and teach me how to read music and also play. According to my parents, this was an important skill, but I almost viewed it as a chore. I regret not taking it more seriously, but I played for 8 years straight and became a very good pianist. At the end of eighth grade, I decided that it was something I did not want to do. I stopped playing piano altogether. This made my mom really sad. A year later, I realized it was something that I loved to do, so I picked it back up again the summer of my freshman year, and I've been playing ever since. Looking back, I can see I was ignorant about what I was learning while I was young, and I should have realized that skills learned then should have been viewed as skills I would use in my future. I believe these skills learned through life should not be put aside but used to better your future. If I would choose to be, for example, a doctor or a fireman, I could do it. However, I would put away my past instead of celebrating it. Everyone should realize that the present will soon be their past, and all their talents and lessons learned then should be used to better their future.
Up next, Ari Haimov explains why he thinks that being both an athlete and a performer has taught him to be more open. Performance, he says, has helped him diversify his life, as well as feel comfortable sharing his passion with others.
For the most part, nothing in my life seems to stay constant. Every year there are new obstacles to face and new changes in my life. Sports have changed, friends have been lost and gained, but there's one thing that's always been there, always pulling me back, and it's my love for performance. Looking back, it feels like yesterday when my middle school teacher told me I should try out for fall production. I felt I had a difficult and pathetic choice to make. I could either define myself by sports, girls, and my strength as an athlete, or I could be defined by music, the theater, and all the misunderstood people who are associated with it. Now to me, I've always felt that that's the problem with school. It's that the majority of kids in school are never pushed to diversify themselves. They're just pushed to classify themselves. So I decided that I would be one of the rare few. I was going to try and satisfy my hunger. I would make musical theater a part of my life without becoming a choir nerd. I have to say, trying out for that middle school play was one of the smartest moves I've made. Why was it? Well, because I did it for me. It was what I genuinely wanted to do. Now, after being in my high school musicals for the past 3 years, it's safe to say that my decision to continue with music was well worth it. The feeling that I get when I perform has yet to be matched by any other experience, to know that 1,000 people are all focused on you, waiting to hear what you're going to say and what you're going to do. When I perform in front of that huge crowd every year, it's like playing in the Super Bowl, knowing that one wrong move and everything can get messed up. Of course, the thrill is great, but what really gets me, what really brings me back every year, is how, in one moment, everything can be released from inside of me. All the stress and headaches from school just evaporate. Everything is gone, except for my passion. For me, musical theater is more than just a show. It's a break from all the stress and wrong in my life. For that hour and a half, I can let myself go, and I can race to the tip of creativity with no one in my way.
Thorson also allowed herself to become something she never would have thought, a little bit of a geek. Charlotte shares a story of how her endeavor to gain some extra credit taught her how to endure and exceed her expectations.
I stood in front of the class and all I could hear was my own breath, inhaling. All the numbers rushed to the front of my blank mind as I exhaled. Slowly I began, 3.14, my magic number. What inspired me to learn such a bland and useless number? Extra credit in a class I should have been working harder in was sufficient to strike up the idea. Whoever can memorize the most digits of pi gets extra credit, our math teacher explained. Sounds easy enough, right? It's not. The patterns never repeat, and it seems to be in another language. I'm not shocked that I took on the nearly impossible challenge because I am one to volunteer, even in a situation I may not be fully equipped to handle. I like to think of it as challenging myself, but some view it as sheer stupidity. What I did find shocking, however, was that I actually enjoyed the task. Furthermore, I found success in memorizing the numbers. Within days, I was typing out numbers on my calculator and laying upside down on my bed making flashcards with the time I should have been using to do my necessary homework. When my teacher caught me daydreaming, I felt a little strange. Rather than daydreaming about the cute boy across the classroom, I found myself secretly signing numbers with my hands under the desk. Something clicked inside my brain because determination alone would not enable someone to complete so tedious a task. The numbers became memories, colors, sets. Numbers would relate to a specific memory or person. I'm not sure how to explain exactly how I memorized those digits because it became so wrapped up, ingrained in my brain. A certain nerdiness with which I had never imagined I possessed came out of me. I was almost embarrassed to admit how much I studied the numbers. My brain was constantly filled with something more important than gossip, and I replaced technology with learning. I liked feeling smart. Even if it was useless, proving I could do something that is beyond most capabilities made me feel unique. Learning pi itself has no real use, and extra credit becomes ultimately meaningless, but it taught me to apply a mantra. I can only rise as high as my individual standards for myself. I didn't set out knowing that I would be able to memorize 243 digits of pi, but something inside me knew I could, or I wouldn't have continually beat the numbers into my head. I had previously excelled in certain aspects of my life with an unfailing persistence. I tore through page after page in my notebook, perfecting each fashion design. I stretched myself beyond normal capacity to improve my dance skills. I even spent hours holed up in my room writing short stories. By raising my standards, even in the area I might not believe to be my strength, I found success in other aspects of my life as well. As I recited those digits of pi, my confidence grew with each syllable. I was no longer scared of my classmates judging my correctness on the board behind me, waiting for me to fail at any moment. The numbers were written for me on the back wall of the room, projected from my brain as if they were actually written in my imagined colors. I was breaking through my own threshold of what I believed I could accomplish. Even more, I was rejecting all my thoughts of inadequacy with all my classmates as witness.
You're listening to Youth Beat Radio. Next up, Upper Arlington student David Smith puts a positive spin on a difficult injury he faced in the past. He believes the perseverance he learned during this time of his life has better enabled him for the adversity he may face in the future.
The scoreboard on the football field said it all. It was the third quarter, and my team was trailing by a touchdown. We were moving the ball for the go-ahead score and were in opponent territory when I went back to pass. I got flushed out of the pocket, fired the ball, and then total darkness. I do not remember whether the pass I threw was completed or how I got to the training room under the home bleachers or exactly when my mom and dad showed up in the training room. I do remember hearing the team doctor say to my parents, "We better get him to a hospital. Looks like he could have a broken jaw." Sadly, the doctor was right. A broken jaw in two places. The result of what I was told by many to be a late hit by an opposing linebacker on me, the quarterback of my team. Just like that, a sophomore year that was on track for academic and athletic accomplishments transformed into a year of coping and challenges. If there's an injury that will completely change your daily routine, it is a broken jaw. For 6 weeks, I spent life with my jaw wired shut, and, it seemed, every aspect of my life was different. The speech I gave in public speaking class through clenched teeth was beyond difficult because I could not enunciate my words clearly or loudly. Lunch trips with my friends were maddening because they were eating the foods I love while I was going home and eating food blended into a brownish liquid ooze that my mom prepared in our family blender. I had to suck my liquid food between the non-existent gaps in my teeth. I even learned how to grow sick and tired of my favorite treat, milkshakes. I was in physical discomfort, but the toll my injury took on me psychologically was worse than any pain I was experiencing. I just felt different, and thought that everybody was studying my every move. I grew tired of being the subject of hallway gossip and stares of my classmates. I know they felt sorry for me, and for reasons I still do not understand, their sympathy made me feel even worse. It was difficult for me to focus on my schoolwork, and my hopes for playing varsity basketball were dashed because of this injury. My grades suffered, and I grew despondent. For weeks, I missed the simple joys of life, such as the sweet taste of real food, the joy of laughing and smiling, the pleasure of a good sneeze or comfortable yawn, or even an underappreciated lick of the lips. Fortunately, those weeks passed, and my broken jaw healed. I learned to appreciate the efforts of my friends and family to make me feel normal during my convalescence. I never felt the power of my mother's love so strongly as when she spent her hours trying to liquefy my favorite solid foods into an edible meal. My sister secretly did a lot of my chores and some of my schoolwork and never told my parents, and my father made sure to tell me, with sincerity, that my broken jaw was a temporary setback and that my adversity would make me stronger and more grateful for pleasures in life. I knew then, and I know now, that there are many things more challenging than a broken jaw. I anticipate that my life will not be without adversity, but I know, having gone through this injury, that I am capable of handling whatever life throws my way. I know that I am a stronger, more grateful, and capable person as a result of this injury.
Maggie Fitz saw a similar positive attitude in the people of Honduras, which she found infectious.
The sun is shining bright as I look up into the hot afternoon sky. I feel the sun beating down on my back as I hammer a nail into the wood. I stand up to stretch my back and start looking at the environment around me. I see chimney smoke rising into air and smell burning wood. I look up to the top of the hill and see family standing outside their houses watching me. And I look to my right and left and see the admiring gazes of children. Their joy and laughter is contagious to me. The past 2 years, I have had an amazing opportunity of traveling to Honduras and participating in a mission trip. We spent 5 days with the people in a town named Caliche. Caliche is a deserted area in Honduras, and it takes 2 hours to get to any sort of civilization beyond it. We rode to Caliche by standing in the back of a pickup truck and holding on for dear life as we went over the continuous ditches on the mountainside. After arriving at Caliche, we quickly made friends with the Honduran people and began creating relationships with them. Our team of missionaries did a health clinic for 2 days pertaining to the physical needs of the Honduran people. They needed things such as toothbrushes, shoes, teeth pulled, vitamins, medications, the list goes on and on. These people would line up outside the clinic and wait for hours in the hot sun to come and talk to a doctor. After these 2 days, we spent 3 more days building houses for 2 families. The community support in this town was amazing. They all came together and wanted to help us. After these 5 days, we presented these houses to the families, and the thankfulness they had was unbelievable. All we did was build a 15-by-15-foot wooden house for them. This does not seem like much to us. However, this meant the world to them. The houses they lived in before were built from mud and twigs. They had holes in the roof, cracks in the side, and old trash stuffed into the cracks to fill them. Poverty is highly prevalent there, and this experience was so humbling. The people I met in Honduras were the most loving, happy, and joyful people I had ever met. They barely had shoes on their feet. However, they were happier than anyone I knew in my community who had all they ever needed or wanted. The second year I went back, I was so excited to see the little girls I had become friends with the year before. I had not had communication with them in a whole year, and I wondered if they would still remember me at all. Upon arriving to Caliche, we unloaded the truck, and three little girls, Denora, Sylvia, and Blanca, came running up to me saying, "Maggie, Maggie!" They had remembered my name after a whole year and were waiting for us to return. This shows how much of an impact we had on this community. We shared our love with them, and they truly appreciated it. Upon returning to Upper Arlington, I had a completely new perspective on life. I wasn't going to worry about all the little things that didn't matter. Before this trip, I would find myself complaining over the silliest things when there were children in another part of the world not knowing if they would have dinner to eat. I saw all the brokenness and worldliness that people hung on to, and it made me sad to think I was once a part of that. After this trip, I was very humbled and forever changed. I now have a new perspective on life that makes me thankful for every day I am given and helps me live every day to the fullest.
Joe Wallace got his new perspective from a more surprising source. He explains how a fish taught him the importance of facing life's obstacles head-on.
As I sit late at night in bed, wondering where I will be in 10 years, I slowly drift off into sleep. When I turn over to face the other side of my bed, an annoying blue light goes right through my eyelids, and my slumber is rudely interrupted. This annoying blue light comes from my fish tank, which as of right now holds one fish. I bought my fish tank the first day of summer and had it running with fish in it that very day. And if you are a household fish expert, like I am now, you know that you need to change the water every month or so in order for your fish to stay healthy and clean. But I didn't learn that right away. The fish slowly began to die off. But the one left, who was the only one of his kind I had bought, was still pulling along. I told myself that when he died, I would get a saltwater fish tank for some more exotic fish. However, as each day passed, I started to notice the little orange guy in there wasn't eating anything. There were leftover flakes all along the bright blue pebbles along the bottom. I started to feed him every other day instead. When the tank started to get dirty, I had pushed it off to the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and so on. It had been almost 2.5 months since I last changed the water, and you know who was still plugging along in that tank? Yeah, that little orange guy. I started to sit back and think about what was actually happening in front of my eyes, and I began to believe in that tank and the one resident left inside of it. It was then when I realized that his conditions were pretty much terrible, that I gave him hope by cleaning his tank. Today, he still barely eats, although some days he eats more than normal, and the water is crystal clear. But he keeps on going like nothing has changed from the first time I dumped him in. Believe it or not, this little guy has inspired me. He has taught me that no matter the conditions you are in, if you just step up and keep doing what you do, you can make it, otherwise known as perseverance. Sometimes life can get even the most optimistic of people down, and there's nothing wrong with hitting the sign that says reality check. What is more important is what you do when you do finally hit that wall. One of my favorite songs of all time is No Matter What by T.I. My favorite line says, "The worst thing you can do is panic. Avoid insanity. Manage to conquer every obstacle. Make impossible possible. Even when winning is illogical, losing is still far from optional." What I take from this message is you can either lie down and say, "Man, that really hurt," or you can stand right back up, push right through those obstacles you face, or maybe you swim right through them, and eventually see that brick wall you just hit as nothing but light, airy feathers. So I encourage everyone perhaps not to literally go out and buy a fish tank in order to experience what I've experienced, but to just sit back and admire what great things life brings to us, looking past all the negatives and striving for the positive ones.
Our final piece today is by Upper Arlington senior Armand Ramnath.
Oh boy, this will be fun. I'm going to pretend to be anything I please today. and you pretend right along with me. Where shall I begin?
Why I want to be Batman. As I thought of all the movies I've seen, I remembered one in particular, Batman Begins. In the beginning, the superhero of Batman has not yet been created. As Bruce Wayne realizes that creating an alter ego is his only choice in the fight against evil, I realize that I too could follow his path and become a real-world Batman. A hero for everyone. Someone that always does the right thing and follows all the cliched rules that come along with being a superhero. Sure, my parents weren't murdered when I was young. I would be the first superhero without intense emotional scarring and wouldn't exactly be living the dream. But I'd be pretty close. I want to be Batman for many reasons. I want to have inherited a financial empire that gives me financial security, allowing me to pursue my endeavors without the risk of every superhero's true villain, bankruptcy. I want to have the vast assets of a company at my disposal, and a British butler with a British name to give me advice, and Morgan Freeman to create unimaginable futuristic weaponry and vehicles that I will use to fight crime. I want to have a secret underground lair where I can create a crime-stopping game plan, and I want a Batmobile to drive around in, despite the obvious security risk it presents. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to follow a gigantic bat-shaped vehicle. I want to be a superhero that has no superpowers. Batman is an everyday man during the day, although slightly richer and living in an imaginary city, so maybe not every day, but he is a man of the people, something that every politician wishes he could say. I want to be Batman because then I can do something about the injustices in the world without having fantastical superpowers. I want to be Batman because he represents the idea that anything is possible. The true spirit of Batman is the spirit of the American dream, the idea that it doesn't matter how you live or where you're from, but it's your actions that count. The idea that one person, regardless of how minuscule one person may be, can make things better for himself and for the people around him. When Batman is thought of as a symbolic American icon and not as a literal person, who wouldn't want to be him?
This has been another episode of Youth Beat Radio. You can check us out on the web at youthbeat.osu.edu. or email us at youthbeat@osu.edu. You can also find us on Facebook. Batman. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Thank you for listening. Youth Beat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio high schools, youth groups, and universities. The program is sponsored by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, and local sponsors. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station or the sponsors.